What's up, guys? Welcome to Just So We're Clear, a podcast brought to you straight out of Singapore with your host, Marissa Tru, and myself, Hanley Hofer. Now, if you've listened to us before, well, you know the deal. But if you're new here, well, hey, welcome.
So on this show, we cover pretty much everything to do with modern life. Female empowerment, sex, mental health, finances, you name it, we do it in the most uncut way possible.
Mm-hmm. So grab a coffee, maybe even a glass of wine.
No, definitely some wine.
Light a scented candle.
Or maybe you're at the gym or you're cooking your dinner. But consider this next hour your time to feel like you're not alone. Because trust us,
we get it. It's Just So We're Clear. Well, ladies and the very few, yet very cool gentlemen that tune in to Just So We're Clear, we back.
It's been a minute, but that's also because, no, we have a real reason this time. This wasn't because we lacked inspiration. It was because I was away for a full month and then I got COVID. So I'm covered.
Okay. The reason I laughed because it's been a minute should actually be our unofficial tagline by now, because we've started pretty much every episode with it's been a minute.
So it's been a minute. Trust us. We get it.
Yeah. So Marissa was away exploring the US of A with work. She had a ball and then she came back.
And then I got the spicy cough.
She got the spicy vid. I myself have been in Singapore, doing pretty good. Have you been doing overall good, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the trip was genuinely the time of my life. And then I had one sweet week where I actually took time to settle back into my life in Singapore. Like, I made sure I rested. And it just felt like a bit of a bitch slap to get COVID after I had done so well, making sure I didn't do my usual, like, burnout sprint at the start. So that was annoying. But all things considered, it's really good. I'd say things are good.
Things are good. I think things are also good. I've been doing a lot of community building. I feel like I'm back on my woo-woo shit.
You are hardcore back on your woo-woo shit. But in a very clear-cut way. It's not just like all rainbows and daisies. It's like, oh, what are we actually going to do with this knowledge now?
Yeah, so I've been attending workshops. I did a breathwork workshop recently. I did an energetic and space holding workshop, which is actually really interesting. I think I shared this with you, but basically the facilitators, they gave us a very in-depth workshop on the power of being intentional with your space and your energy. And what that means is that every day, whether we realize it or not, we're holding space for ourselves, for other people. We're giving our energy to situations. And because we do it all the time, and we're almost like, you know, we don't even notice when we do it, to take a step back and to really think about what that means for us, how it looks like for each of us, it was really fascinating. For example, like right now, you and I.
Yeah.
We are essentially holding space for each other.
Are we also holding space for our audience? Or no, because they're not in the conversation?
Not truly. Like, our audience are part of the experience, but they're not. Like, different example. Like, we are holding space for each other, you and I, in this little container, right? But if we were to host on stage and our audience were in front of us, we would be holding space for our audience as well.
I guess I mean in terms of as we host these conversations, we're always keeping our audience in mind and what we're like communicating to them at the same time we're communicating with each other.
I'd say we're being conscious of their them being there, but because they're not like here
physically
with us
present,
we don't have to really be exerting our energy towards them. Like, we know you're there, we know that you're part of this conversation too, but in a very different way than if you were like literally in front of us.
Sure. Like the difference between sitting at a dinner table versus sending a voice note.
I guess so. And so something that I did take away from this workshop was that energy is our most valuable asset. We should always be very careful where we put it. And I think we knew this anyway, but after having how sensitive we are as, you know, beings to energy and around us, it's like, okay, protect your peace.
Mm-hmm.
And also, excuse me, some of us genuinely are just more sensitive to energy than others. So if you're someone who is not very conscious about holding your own space and you go through the world, you go through your day, you are absorbing other people's energies without even realizing maybe. And you come home at the end of the day and you are beyond drained. Mm-hmm. You're like, but why am I always so exhausted when I get home? It's maybe you are absorbing the people around you, your energy.
So on a very practical level, what does holding your space look like genuinely when you go out for your day? Like, say you go to the office and then you go to the gym and then you go meet a friend for coffee and then you come home. Like, mm-hmm. what does holding your space in those environments actually look like?
So it can look by it can look like being conscious of your like your actual like energetic parameter.
Okay.
And some of it can look like visualizing like a protection layer around you. Like, so visualizing really helps. Like, actually, I spoke to this girl. She said that when she feels overwhelmed, she visualizes a cone of light around her. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, she sort of like knows and helps herself feel protected because she has created this conscious, to herself at least, space of like safe zone for herself.
So imagine you're bubble boy.
Yeah, bubble boy, basically.
And make sure that no one can ever, or you're always practicing energetic safe distancing at all times. Like, you have that 2 meter perimeter at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. You just be conscious of what you decide is your space. It's also kind of like before you do a pitch at work or before you do public speaking or before you like have to put yourself out there or before you sit at dinner and you be on in front of a social group, you kind of like have to tell yourself to turn it on sometimes, right? You kind of to take a second to be like, okay, we're going to get into the space and we're going to like do
like
this.
We did right before this episode.
Like we did right before this episode. So if we can do that for other people and in situations that require us to be extroverted, like we can do that for ourselves.
So to the untrained person, like someone who enters into this, like these kinds of conversations and doesn't really know their way around it yet. It doesn't really have that too much meaning to them yet. How are they going to know who takes more energy from them and who they actually get energy from? Mm. Like, how do you know that for yourself? How do you figure that out?
I mean, how do you figure it out? You know.
You just know.
You just know, girl.
Just listen.
You know. It's our nervous system tells us.
But I would say, I think it's because, you know, in the last few years of this podcast and also through the years of our friendship, like it's been this ongoing conversation. So it's kind of been this incremental learning. But if you were to throw it back to, say, 5 years ago, me, who was exhausted all the time, always socially burnt out and had no idea why even like the simplest request would like knock her over the edge. The concept of that being about like preserving the sanctity of my space, just, it didn't mean anything to me. I didn't know what that practically looked like. I didn't know what the first steps to protecting that were. So I feel like it wasn't as intuitive then as it is to me now. And I guess I go to think of like all the people around who don't have that sense for themselves yet. Mm-hmm. Like they don't have that intuition or that instinct for themselves.
Yeah, it's a journey, right? I mean, and also there's a lot of practices and methods that people can use to ground for themselves, like to find an anchor within themselves. So yeah. I've got a couple. I have pressure points that I push this, like, you know, this fleshy bit between your index finger and your thumb, that like webbed bit.
Yeah.
Or if you hold up your finger being like, oh, loser, that bit that's fleshy in between, there's a pressure
the
point.
Finger foreskin.
Yeah, finger foreskin. There's a pressure point in there that I press down when I feel overwhelmed. And that actually grounds me into my space.
Is that a you thing or is that like a general?
That's a real thing. That's a pressure point. And if I am in front of people and I can't afford to let my hands show that I'm actually grounding myself, I will push the tip of my tongue to the roof of my mouth. And actually there is an energetic like channel within all of us where if we push our tongue to the roof of our mouth, we are connecting the two ends and we kind of keep our energy flow within ourselves.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah. Look it up, guys. Tip of your tongue to the roof of your mouth. It's not a new thing. It was taught to me.
Okay. So I think I would have assumed that like everyone should find one that works for them sort of thing. Mm. Like it's good to know that there's sort of like it's an actual thing, because my usual, and this sounds almost like cartoonish, is I would just dig my nails into my palms and be like, that's the focal point where you just feel like a concentration of feeling, and everything can focus onto that one area. And even if it's through like a little bit of pain, it's almost like a comforting pain, mm-hmm. where I'm like, okay, I know where that is. That's my singular point of focus. Because otherwise, it's like, you know how, I mean, everyone who's on TikTok and Instagram these days is questioning whether we have ADHD, because everyone on TikTok and Instagram is talking about how ADHD is literally every single thing we do in our day is a symptom of it, right? And it's that same idea of like trying to figure out what coping mechanisms you've established for yourself to counter some of the things that they've presented as symptoms. Have you done that yet?
I know what you're talking about, but I haven't. I mean, I no. So the answer is no, because I haven't. Yeah.
So when you watch all those, you don't think, oh, I might have ADHD.
Oh, I 1,000,000% think I do.
I'm convinced. I was watching this interview with Trevor Noah where he was saying it was more about the fact that he knows he was spinning so many plates that overwhelm was always around the corner. And that was the first time I thought, oh, if that's it, then things are going to change.
One of the things that I radically accepted about myself a few years ago was my acceptance over how damn sensitive I was. Mm-hmm. So, like, the ADHD thing is also extreme sensitivity, mm-hmm. and, like, overstimulation a little easier than your, let's say, average. So I always felt I was a little bit more sensitive than average. But, that, like, maybe it's ADHD or maybe I'm just sensitive.
That's the thing, right? Like, it's getting harder and harder to not diagnose yourself with this internet-verified criteria of symptoms that I think are just something we all experience and all endure. So I was talking about sensitivity. I was talking to my sister on the phone just yesterday, and her whole thing was, you are hypersensitive. It's just you refuse to admit it. And I was like, ah. So now when I watch all these sensitivity things, I'm like, this makes sense. Mm. But then it's also just like confirmation bias.
Yeah, but also, and I thought about this, I thought about actually getting the test and everything. Would it change my day-to-day if I did have a diagnosis and say that you were told you have clinical ADHD? Do you think it would change your life? Do you think it would affect you?
I think it would give me a peace. Mm-hmm. For sure. Because the number of times, like talking about, you know, protecting your energy and then energetic sensitivities and all, like, and then overwhelm always being around the corner. Like whenever I would get so overwhelmed to the point where I say I would start crying, it was always, how can everyone else seem to handle all of these things at once? And I simply can't. Like it's basic day to day and I cannot do it. Why can't I do it? So I feel like someone coming in and being like, it's because this is something that you haven't acknowledged as an actual problem. And like, this is something that's recognizable, treatable. There are tools to help you with. I think would change the game. I think would just give me the ability to exhale rather than feel like I was failing.
Well then girl, get tested.
It's like $2,000. That's my problem.
I feel like this conversation has just led to, so test.
No, it's, if anyone wants to pay for my tests, let me know. Oh my God.
One thing that, last thing on this energy workshop that I actually thought was really valuable, and I think everyone can maybe relate, is that because our nervous system is so responsive to our, you know, environment, even in an energetic level, sometimes when you are energetically or when you feel safe around a certain person, you get sleepy. So hear me out on this, right? We've spoken about this, but in this workshop, there was a guided meditation and some of the girls like fell asleep instantly and they woke up and they were so confused how they passed out so quickly. They're like, I wasn't even tired. I just fell asleep after the first 2-3 breaths. And the facilitator said, maybe this particular space and the group you're in with the, like us, everyone here holding this really wonderful nurturing space for each other, maybe you felt so safe that you fell asleep. Your nervous system was like, ah, I can take rest now. And you passed out. And I know that this has happened to you.
I 1,000% relate to this on every level, because I know for a fact that when my insomnia is really coupled with like a high period of anxiety, I mean, they are often very coupled. When I wake up in the middle of the night, it is a panic. Like, I'll sit bolt upright. I might be sweating. I think something's gone wrong, or I think I need to do something right away. And it's that like urgency and panic that basically tells me my brain has told my body fight or flight time. Like, we need to panic right this second. And then I found when I tried somatic therapy, the therapist afterwards would be like, you fell asleep a few times. And I didn't even register that I had. I thought that this was an ongoing and flowing conversation. She was like, no, you dipped in and out of consciousness in waves. I was like, ah, had no idea. Every Shavasana, dead asleep, because fitness is very much my safe space, my safe time. And then now being in a relationship, sleep like a baby.
You sleep well next to the person you love.
Because there's someone next to me. Oh, damn. Powerful words.
No, it's true.
But
it's true.
There's someone next to me that I feel fundamentally safe with.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it's like you can almost physically feel it. My body just relaxes. I can almost feel my body sink deeper into the mattress. And I know it because I won't hear my alarms. I will wake up in the morning on the weekend at like 9, 10 a.m. And that's unheard of for me. I wake up 7 every time. 9, 10 a.m. And I'm like, oh, that's fine.
So earlier you asked, like, how do you know when something is good for you or a person is good for you energetically? I think that we also answered it there for you guys. Like, number one, the obvious, which is that after you leave the situation, you feel energized. I think that we can all talk about and relate with that. And the second one is you fall asleep. Oh, how do you know you're in a safe space? Your body forces itself into rest because it just feels like it has to let its guard down. And you feel peaceful. And sometimes you fall asleep.
It's true. But I won't lie that in feeling the calm that comes with feeling safe, added this extra layer of contemplation where it was like, does that mean I risk losing my edge in terms of like a lot of the drive and ambition that I have? A lot of my achievements are driven out of this, like, we got to go, we got to do this. We got to, like, there's an aggression to it. There's an anxiousness to it. Mm. It's like an anxiety that precedes action.
Interesting. But then is that actually creation? Because creation and action is not necessarily the same thing.
True. You could just be spinning your wheels in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that it's one of the things that I've really given credit to when it came to me excelling in my professional career.
Is that because you had this anxiousness about you? You like funneled it into a positive thing, which was your work. So you had drive and you had edge because you had this restlessness.
Yeah, because anxiety, when it comes down to it, is directionless energy.
Mm.
So if you learn how to harness it and then you go, okay, this doesn't have to be a negative thing. We can put this to motion. Like, we can use this as a driver. And then suddenly it's like, you know, the feeling before you get on stage is like this flurry of feelings where you're like, okay, I have something to perform. I have someone, like, I have a crowd to speak to. I have questions to ask my panel. And then so when you get up there, you're harnessing that to be like, let's fucking go. Like, let's do it.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just so different. Like, you know me as well. I operate on all levels much better when I come from a place of peace. So I do really bad when I'm anxious and overwhelmed. So like, if I'm grounded and calm, then I excel and I can create.
Yeah.
Like, guys, my washing.
It's like the washing machine is just like, beep.
So anyway, something to think about, you know. I think it's a really good check-in with ourselves to analyze, like, what are we giving our energy away to? What are we actually holding space for? Are we holding space for ourselves? Are we holding space for the right people? You know, are we allowing ourselves to be in spaces that let us feel rested and energized? Or are we accidentally letting ourselves be in spaces that drain and take?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good intro to it, but like, I think there's a lot of other questions that keep cropping up. While we're talking about it in terms of like its simplest introductory level, like, I think you end up, or at least my brain goes to all the other little questions that feed off of that. Like, for example, you know, you might identify a friend who's a bit of an energy suck, and you might think to yourself, maybe I set clearer boundaries with this person, maybe I take a bit of distance from this person. And it's noticing that there is a difference between sometimes a really good person can not be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
And being like, okay, so they're my friend. And so now I know that I'm exhausting myself being around them. So maybe I should make space from them. But they're such a good person that it seems counterintuitive to push away someone that I think is good, even if they're not good for me. You know?
Yeah, I get it. But there are so many people who are good on this earth. Like, what's good for you is more important to prioritize. Because at the end of the day, like, whatever you put it out into the space with this person who unintentionally, even if they're good, drains from you, like, it's not good for you. It's like if you're allergic to a certain nutritious food. Some people can't eat nuts. Like, it's true. Good for you.
That's a good analogy.
But it's not good for you, you know?
Yeah. That's a very good analogy.
So pull away. And I think space is warranted. And also, you don't need to really explain your space to people sometimes.
I think that's the thing a lot of people are going to struggle with. Because the other person's always going to be like, but why? And if you don't have, you may not have even figured out the words for yourself to be able to articulate it to that person.
That's part of it. Relationships are our greatest teachers, even friendships. So, like, I don't have an answer of what to do, how to explain. I think each situation is unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
So on this topic of relationships, there was a topic that has come up. And actually, this was brought up at a dinner table opposite a friend who was slightly older than me. So I will credit this person having more lived experiences. And they made a statement which, after they made it and pled their reasons, I started to agree with them. And it is the whole question whether is unconditional love possible between adults, not including your family?
No.
No.
Well, I mean, I guess it comes down to how simplistically you want to define love, right? If it's just like having that nugget of, I always wish this person well, and that's the embodiment of your love, like the almost like the minimum threshold of love you need to have for someone to consider an unconditional love, like that little bit of love that will never die,
mm-hmm.
then maybe.
Okay, so keep going. You were not done.
But then if you're in a relationship, love isn't the only thing that keeps a relationship alive, and therefore unconditional love, if anything, it should never be the case.
I agree. I think unconditional love only exists between mother and child. And even then, it's a bit of a gray area because, you know,
some
mothers are and child or have a complex relationship. But like me loving you, there are conditions. If you disrespect me, it's going to be really hard to unconditionally love you. Hurt my feelings, if you like do things that just not even step over my boundaries, but like piss on my boundaries.
Bingo.
Then there's no such thing.
Yeah.
And so I think this, like, I think it's actually really dangerous as adults to throw around a statement like, I will unconditionally love you forever, because things can change.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Like, I think when you introduce the idea of unconditional love into a relationship, you're saying almost it is even at the expense of other things that matter to the same level as love in the first place. Namely, what you already said was trust and respect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think those are the three pillars that make that, like, pyramid.
And it's also so, like, finite.
Finite, yeah.
Finite, excuse me. Because it's also...
Infinite, minus the in.
Yeah, finite. But it, in the sense that, like, if you use that statement, like, you're kind of hooking on a person. You can't take that back. And it also was like, because I love you forever and ever, no matter what.
Emotional hostage.
It is hostage. Yeah, it's like an emotionally hostile term.
Yeah.
I
think it's
like
an emotionally hostile term.
I love the notion of it, but I'm just like, I kind of have like this realistic approach on it now. I'm like, I just don't think that we should, I don't think it's real.
But
anymore.
Again, I think it's always down to the context that you use it in, right? Like, I've had conversations with, say, my ex, where I've said, listen, there's always going to be a part of me that loves you and always wishes the best for you.
Mm-hmm.
that is where that love lies, and that is all it will ever be. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Like, I do.
It's like there's this unconditional appreciation at this point in time for who you are, despite all the conditions that you've like not done great at. But it's just like, let that be the diamond that can't be destroyed, and that will exist forever. But that is not the thing that plays on us or like helps us navigate anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, that's
in this
not
life.
The present.
No,
that's
it's not.
That's like a past version of you that I love. And that's a yeah. past version of me that loved you. But that, we are not yeah. those people today because we weren't even the same people we were yesterday. Yeah, so
maybe the unconditional part of that doesn't even exist in that scenario. Mm. It's just like an everlasting, but it, and it's...
That's in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's harder to kill off or maybe it's borderline immortal, but it is not unconditional. Unconditional to me is dangerous.
I think so too. I think so too. And like, you know, like... I'm a romantic. I know you secretly are a romantic too, deep down inside.
Yeah. Surfacing more and more like a zit.
Is it lovely?
My dad was like, "You're getting softer." I was like, "You shut the fuck up."
Come over to the soft side. But I think like out of respect of true love, like true love means that I truly, like I have so much love for you, but I respect you too much to say I will unconditionally love you because I don't believe that that can exist between like humans, adults, just like that.
Okay, so there's two things here. One thing we referred to earlier was like the emotional hostility of using a term like I unconditionally love you, right? Yeah. So it's like holding that person hostage and like giving them an unrealistic standard of affection that they may not be able to reach themselves. So it's always being like, you can't love me as much as I love you sort of idea.
Ooh.
But the other side of that is, I think, like we're talking about it, that like if I said it to you, you're the person that carries the weight of that to a degree. Mm. But then the other side of this is also, if I decide to unconditionally love someone, naturally, I'm immediately compromising myself.
Mm, and you're so, like, right, because you're kind of making this little promise to yourself or
bingo,
something.
Bingo. So you're also disrespecting yourself. Mm. And I don't think that's fair on you either. It's so again, like, say hypothetically, you and I are in a relationship and...
I mean, hypothetically. What do you mean, hypothetically?
Just for like, oh my God, are we out? Facebook is complicated.
She was away in America for 3 weeks. I honestly messaged her being like, yo, this long distance is giving me PTSD.
Yeah, like you need to come back.
You need to come home. I didn't sign up for this.
But so say I say I love you unconditionally. And then say with that information, you go out and say you spread a rumor about me. Say you, I don't know, you cheat on me. Say you literally steal money out of my wallet. Like, say you just do fucked up shit, right? And there's me being like, but I said I was going to love her unconditionally, I know. So I have to, even though she's doing all this shit to me.
And like, I could also turn around and be like, bitch, you said
bingo.
You could love me unconditionally.
So it's something that could so easily be weaponized. And it just feels like it's as positive as it sounds as a statement. It feels like it can be more corrupting than it can be beneficial.
So we're really like shitting on this right now. Let's like, let's try to make a positive spin out of this. Because there are people in relationships probably listening to this being like, but I do love them unconditionally. Like, we hear you.
No, you don't. Judgment. You just love them a lot.
Do whatever you want to do. But okay, so what's like a nice like midway level type of expression that you can offer up so that we can kind of retract ourselves from pissing on love, which we have been for the last 10 minutes.
My statement was going to be, the only question you need to ask yourself is, what would it take for you to leave?
I think the kindest thing you can say to a person you love is, I see and accept you for all you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's to say that, like, you're never demanding perfection. You can acknowledge flaws, shortcomings, or areas of improvement and still be like, you know what? I'll be here.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same as unconditional love, but that is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important.
I think that's important, too. And also this, like, idea that I accepted you yesterday, I accept you today.
Yeah.
Like, and tomorrow I'll probably still accept you as well. Like, you know, like this whole idea of like my acceptance of you, your complete being, is my version of the unconditional love statement without it being
sure.
as detailed and
as
possibly damning. Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's a good way to put it. It's basically like you can trust me to turn up for you again and again and again mm-hmm. every time you need it. Because I see you and like I know you.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to start being really extra with this and start signing off my like love letters with I accept you, Hanley.
I'm going to go a little creepier and be like, I see you, Marissa.
Why not double down? I see and respect you. Best regards, Hanley.
I've seen it, chosen to live with it. XOXO, Marissa.
We're carving a new way for romanticism up in 2023.
Conditional love, all about
it. Conditional love. No, it's true though. Love is a little conditional.
It's always a little bit conditional because, and it's something we've spoken about before, you cannot or you should not love someone else more than you love yourself.
Absolutely.
And so if you love someone unconditionally, the only person you should unconditionally love is yourself. How about that?
Preach, girl.
Let's put that on another t-shirt.
Unconditionally love myself.
Yeah. Love yourself unconditionally.
Take all of it. I'm watching Jewish Matchmaking.
I have not started this because it just feels like more chaos on reality TV.
And I'm into it. But the matchmaker, Aliza, I think that's her name. She said a statement which I fully agree with. Or maybe it was one of the old couples they interviewed. Either way, how to know if you're ready to get married is if you're ready to marry yourself.
I was ready to marry myself ages ago. I would be a bum ass wife. Like, I would be so much fun. I play sports. I'm funny. Make my own money. I know how to cook chicken. Like, yeah. Like, where's the flaw?
Chicken game on point.
Yeah, dude. Roast chicken every weekend. Like, I am wife material. Don't you think? You know you're wife material.
I've been looking at myself in the eyeball in the mirror for like a while now, being like, why has no one wifed you up yet?
So mine is different. It's like, I know I'd be a sick ass wife, but I don't see myself as a wife.
Okay, wait, let's deconstruct this. What you mean? No, partner, wife, like we're using wife, but the term really is like partner, right? Well, I mean, life,
like,
partner.
Okay, yeah, like I'm in a relationship. I'm really happy, right? But I think in my mind, I still see the term wife is still being like too much in a box in my mind. Like right. There's something that's too definitive about the characteristics of a wife that isn't about my ability to live up to it. It's whether I want to be that. And I don't think how I framed wife in my mind is something I want to be just yet.
How do you frame it in your mind then?
I couldn't even tell you, you know.
Is it attached to some of the gender roles that yes. we are trying to conclude whether are for us or not?
For sure.
Okay, so there's
it's like,
that.
It's like the idea of, okay, so, you know, you get married and then you get the house with the white picket fence and then your husband goes off to work. And then did I give up my career to have a baby? Did I decide to be a stay-at-home mom? Like, did I decide to create a little micro business or like a little multi-level marketing Ponzi scheme in my backyard because I was so bored and wanted to figure out ways to make money? Like, those are all things that I'm just like, that's not, like I've got so much of this idea of like my independence and like my building an empire and all that sort of stuff that just doesn't feel like I know how to reconcile it with the image of wife.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think you're not alone on that. There has been so much baggage around what being a wife can mean to people these days. But I think that that is something we can work individually to deconstruct. Because at the end of the day, wife is just a word for it. But what we're talking about here is like lifelong or like a committed partnership.
Yeah.
So to rephrase the Jewish matchmaker, are you ready to have a committed, lifelong, conscious partnership with yourself? Or then you're ready for another?
Yeah, I'd say I was ready for that for a while. But yeah, no, I mean, I know that like my construction of what a wife is can sound problematic to some, but it's because I just haven't unpacked it enough. But it's the idea of domesticity and like, there's plenty of wives out there, right, who are power women. They're still CEOs of companies and they're still married with kids and like they do it all. But I'm like, that's a lot. That's a lot.
It's a lot to do it all. Well, something to think there. I'm definitely going to show your boyfriend this episode and be like, she's ready to be a wife.
Don't do it.
Hey, you want to hear something cool?
Oh my God. Just listen to 38 minutes and 47
seconds.
Just
skip to this bit here and then film your reaction. Well, guys, as usual, I hope that episode sparked a level of thought. And as usual, we always want to hear what that thought is. So write in. We love it when you do. Marissa, any concluding notes?
Just that I love the full-fledged love letters that we get in our inboxes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And like the full breakdowns of like where you are in your life. And then sort of things that you picked up on that you learned from us. And then, but more so stuff that you figured out for yourself that you cared to share with us. That's never, like that never gets old. That always makes me so happy because then I'm like, oh, I learned something today.
Keep them coming. We love you. We hope this episode ticked all the boxes. And yeah, can't wait to hear from you.
XOXO. Bye.
No, wait. I see you. I accept you. Love Hanley and Marissa.